Welcome to the Performance Baseball Podcast, talking about youth baseball coaching and player development. Our goal is to equip coaches and parents to win on and off the field.
We are your hosts, Adam Young
and Josh Riley.
Like, subscribe, and comment, and if you ask a question in the comments, we'll do our best to answer it.
Now, let's go to the show.
Welcome back to the Performance Baseball Podcast. How you doing, Josh?
Doing well, man. Doing well. How's it going with you?
Going well. Going well. Yeah. It is rainy and cold in Oklahoma City today, and I texted my wife just a little bit ago, like, hey, how does chili sound for tonight? I just want to cozy up at home, turn the fireplace on.
That's, you know, really how today feels.
Make some chili.
Yes.
Watch a movie.
So hopefully by the time you're listening to us, hopefully you guys have nice weather. But yeah, it's, I mean, I feel like fall in Oklahoma this fall has been really weird. It's been warm. It's been nice.
Very warm. Yeah.
And like today, man.
Yeah, like we haven't had any tournaments canceled or anything up until like this tomorrow.
Pouring
this
rain.
Weekend.
I think it's what, barely 60 degrees outside. Of course, I don't know why I chose to wear shorts, but I'm freezing, you know, like, yeah. It's a dreary day, and it's supposed to, I think they said like 6 inches of rain this weekend.
Yeah,
so who knows?
It's gonna be crazy. But man, I felt like that warm pot of chili. You know? do you have a favorite chili recipe? What's your go to?
Man, Katie, my wife, does a really good white chicken chili in
Instapot. So does mine.
Instapot it up. Yeah, so it just cooks all day. Then. Yeah, we like really quick meals. Like, no one likes sitting there cooking for hours. You know, like, it's just like, what can we knock out in 15, 20 minutes?
Turn it on.
Or, yeah, Instapot. Yeah. Instapots are clutch.
Yes.
That and air fryers, I don't know what we'd do without
them. Man, no kidding.
Air fryers and Instapots are where it goes.
Are you, so in your red chili, are you a beans or no beans?
Beans. Yes, we are beans.
Yeah.
I know there's that whole theory, like, you can have beans in chili. It's like, wait, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Some I want all the things. I want, like, jalapenos and bell peppers and onions. I want... It's a throw everything in there type situation for me.
I'm more the beans and meat kind of guy. You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, for I mean, real. Chili's chili. You throw that in. Are you a bread with chili, like cornbread and chili, or like a chips and chili?
Man, I do love me some cornbread.
Cornbread and chili?
We've got a cast iron skillet at home that we've been using for years that's perfect for cornbread.
Nice.
And, oh, man, it's so
nice. Yeah, we're the tortilla chip.
We're
the tortilla chip chili.
Well, especially, so with white chicken chili, we're that way, too. Like, I want some guacamole maybe even in there.
For sure, yeah.
And chips. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, heck, if you're listening right now, put in your favorite chili.
Yeah.
Put in your favorite chili recipe and what you have with it.
Put it in the comments. all right, so last night was my son's senior night in marching band, which is hard to believe. I don't feel old enough to have a senior in high school, but it was really fun. We got to walk on the field with him, and they announced his name and said he's going to OU, gonna major in pre-med and all this stuff. And man, it was surreal. Like, I remember when we moved here 3.5 years ago, and golly, time flies. And I cannot believe that his whole high school is just about done. Like, that's, I mean, obviously crazy. We still got all of spring, but these milestone things are crazy.
Yeah, you hear about senior night. Like, I can't even imagine. So I have a 3-year-old and 1-year-old, and I can't even imagine what that feels like.
Yeah.
Having a senior in high school, you're not even that old.
No, I'm not. I'm only 41. We were really young when we had our first.
Yeah.
Were
there any tears?
No, I did okay. I think Mallory, my wife, may have been a little misty, but really she did great.
Excitement.
I was very proud.
That is awesome.
She did good. But then the rain came through, and
rain on you guys?
Yeah, it did as we were heading out. So the band didn't get to perform at halftime like we thought, because they just sent everybody home because there was like a hour and a half delay. So they played like two plays and then called it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
They
gosh.
Got on the field, played yeah, maybe one set of downs and then
what?
And then
dude,
called
it's football.
It. And then,
what?
And so sent everybody inside or sent everybody away and then they restarted I think at 8:30.
Dude, football's supposed to be played in the rain.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it was the lightning.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, there was a lot of lightning.
Yeah.
That was a good call.
At any rate, it was wild. Have you had any of those, like, milestone moments, like your first time dropping off at preschool or anything like that that's gotten you misty-eyed?
I mean, I think this year was the first. I mean, yeah, when my son, before we had my daughter, my son, you know, you kind of get teary-eyed. But, like, I remember this year. It was, like, Berkeley, our daughter, who's one, she started doing Mother's Day Out with my son, same church. And this was, like, the first where it was like, oh, my gosh, we don't have the little sidekick with us.
Yeah.
You know, because she's with us all the time.
Right.
It's like, you know, when that started, it was like, oh, wow, like, I don't have my daughter right beside me 24/7.
Yeah.
I think me and my wife definitely. But then, you know, there's that big relief where you're like, now we can get things done.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yes.
Yeah. But yes, having young kids sometimes is nice, like having them go to Mother's Day Out because you can actually accomplish things. But
yeah.
It is nice to have them around.
I'm really liking your hat. You got the dad vibes hat.
Dad
going
vibes,
today.
Yes.
I like it. That's
vibes.
A sweet hat. Where'd you
yeah,
get
thanks.
That?
What was it called? There's like a dad, I think it's like, I can't remember the name of the company, but they have like dad shirts. They have
man, I like
dad
that.
Hats.
I'm gonna have to
stuff.
Give me one of those.
Dad vibes.
That's
yes.
a cool hat.
Yeah,
I have entirely too many hats.
Same.
I
you see my shelf, man.
Oh man, it's so bad. I think how many hats do you think you have?
Man, I would have to count probably over 40.
Yeah.
Know.
Yeah, I think I'm
tons.
Over 40 as
yes.
well.
Yes, it has its own shelf in the closet, like
yep.
like long shelf.
I've got 3 shelves. But mine aren't long. It's I don't know, 3 foot long, 3 foot wide. And
oh, yeah.
So I've got like 3 foot wide and 3 shelves of that.
Nice.
And but like they're all stacked on top of
yes,
each other.
Yes, same.
Yep.
Same.
Yeah.
Sometimes I forget how many, yeah, what hats I need to wear. Yeah.
Yeah.
When we moved last fall, I made a really big mental note of like, hey, I need to remember to start rotating hats so I don't just sit there and get dusty. Wear them. Yes.
You were wearing a white, like all white
yeah.
performance hat a few weeks ago. I was like, oh man, that's a good hat. I might need to get one of those too.
And then I probably had the baby blue one and then the dad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen, yeah. I don't remember the baby blue one. Are there uniforms that are baby blue?
We had the baby blue when we had softball.
Oh, yeah.
So
softball
was
yeah.
baby blue. Unfortunately, those teams have fizzled out, so we don't have an active softball team.
So if you're a softball coach, come on.
Come on. You have nice baby blue. Yeah, have baby blue.
Because I was thinking it would be fun to do an alternate jersey that was baby
yeah,
blue.
We've heard that a number of times. And then, of course, you throw out the random colors. It's like, oh, we need red. But it's like, no, but our team colors are blue and
right,
green. Like,
right,
no.
Yeah. Or black.
Yeah.
We kind of have that with the little City Connect jerseys we got going.
Oh, yeah.
Are those, because those are mostly green, but they've got, are they black or are they navy?
I don't know. They may have,
as a,
I don't know. It's kind of like that ombre where it kind of fades. I don't know if it fades to black or blue. I don't know.
They're
that's
cool,
a good question.
Though. They're cool. Who designed those?
Matt Burns on our 12U.
Oh, nice.
They designed it.
Way
yeah.
to go, Matt. Those are sweet.
Yeah.
Our boys have been begging for them. The 11U boys have seen some of the other guys
yeah.
wearing them around the facility.
It's almost like the shoulders are kind of like neon green. So our colors are pretty much like Seahawk colors. But like it's almost like a green and then it has like, yeah, I think they're navy blue. Like a building,
yeah.
it's like the skyline, and then it fades into the green.
Is it actually the Oklahoma City skyline? Or,
yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Cool.
Good stuff.
All right. You want to talk about success?
Let's talk about success.
It's time to talk about success.
Woo! All right. Today we are talking about self-control.
Yeah.
And I did a thing. I went back and found the audiobook for The Pyramid of Success that John Wooden wrote with his pastor. And they go building block by building block,
huh.
you know, chapter by chapter. And it was a really good listen. So some of the things he talked about, first off, from a player's standpoint, having control of your emotions. Like he obviously the definition is, or you want to give us the definition real quick?
Oh, yeah, I have it right here. Yeah, self-control. It says practices self-discipline and keep emotions under control. Good judgment and common sense are essential.
So my first thought was that self-discipline aspect of it, mm-hmm. of making sure that, you know, you're working in the cages, you're working on yourself, like you're running when you need to run, you're lifting when you need to lift, like yeah. those kinds of self-discipline things. But he was talking more about emotions and emotional self-control. And the analogy he used was, you know, imagine yourself getting ready to play golf. And, you know, if you are overly amped up and overly emotional, you're going to hit that ball even further to the right and slice it even harder than if you are in control.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Emotions play such a big role in just overall, like, how you play, for sure.
Yeah. It's one thing I've been working with my 11U boys on, especially. After our discussion on enthusiasm last week, and I was going to save this for Chalk Talk, but after our discussion on enthusiasm last week, I went into our tournament saying, guys, let's ramp up the enthusiasm. Was it you that had said, you know, two strikes?
If yeah.
You
cheer off, on. Crazy? Yeah.
I told them that and they did it.
That's awesome.
And they started going nuts every time we would foul one off.
Dude, good on two you guys. Strikes.
And man, it just made the energy of the team so much more heightened, and like it was palpable. And we hauled off and went undefeated for the weekend.
That is so cool. And you guys were up in Wichita, or Goddard, right?
Yeah, we were up in Kansas. Goddard, Kansas. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was awesome. We represented Team Oklahoma, beat all the Kansas teams.
That's exciting, man. And also, like, when you're making your teams chant for, like, when your batter fouls off a two-strike, like, one, that means your whole team is plugged in, which is exciting.
Yes.
But also being that batter, like, thinking about, like, your teammates are literally – like pulling for you. You yes. hear them. Cause I mean, I've talked to my players about that, where like how bad it stinks when you're up there up to bat. You have two strikes on you. No one in the dugout seems like they care. You know, it's just, you're up there by yourself. But when you hear your teammates hooting and hollering cause you fouled it off, you got to the next pitch. Like, oh my gosh, that gives you so much confidence.
Yes.
Gives you a great feeling.
Yeah, it does. So I started doing it with my younger boys this week. And doggone it, if we didn't play so much tougher, awesome. It's amazing. Now, the balance to that is we can't get so high and then have the lows get really low.
Like, yes.
The enthusiasm has to be there, but then we also have to have that resilience, that self-control for when the lows happen, that we make it not a big deal.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where, yeah, it's a constant grind though, like with youth athletes, is because any athlete, they're going to be emotional. They're going to be emotional. So the lows, I mean, the key is like, all right, don't let the lows beat you up. Be like the same team, still hoot and holler, no matter if you're losing by five or losing by one or winning by 10, does not matter. We have to make sure that we're even kilter.
I think self-control is probably the hardest one that I have had to learn as a coach of baseball. It's so hard.
Same. Man, I can think back to my first year, my first one or two seasons coaching. Oh, man, it was awful. I think I resembled myself after watching so many Augie Garrido videos in Texas that I think I felt like I had to be this big, loud, crazy coach. So literally, like, if we lost, I was screaming at them. We'd run, we'd do everything. Dude, I had kids quitting my team. I was the screamy, oh my gosh, I had no control of my emotions. I mean, I was giving across a good point, you know, but like the way I was doing it was not a way. I'm pretty sure like Fields Away could hear me screaming at my team. Like it was bad. It took me a while to get my emotions under check, understanding what my actual coaching voice is, or what like I'm called to be as a coach, me personally.
Well, and there just is a huge difference between 13-year-old boys and Division I athletes playing in Texas. And sometimes those it's hard to remember that those are two totally different environments.
It's true. You know? And if you don't know Augie Garrido, I apologize for the videos that you're probably going to go look up, because he is going to scream and
drop all sorts of F-bombs.
But, I mean, he builds them up. Like, he makes them very strong. Like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, he's, what, a Hall of Fame coach, right? Like, yeah. He's a great-time coach, all-time coach.
The thing is, as a Division I athlete, especially at Texas Division I athlete, like, you got to think those guys are among the best of the best. Yes. In college baseball.
Yes.
And so they probably have had everything handed to them. They're especially, yes, going through high school, where they just knew they were the best.
Yes.
And what they actually need is to be taken down a couple notches.
Yeah,
and
for
so
sure.
That's probably why it works. Yeah. Whereas on our end, it's like the total opposite. Like,
oh my gosh! Yeah. As soon as you hear, yeah, thinking back to like when I was a kid, if my coach ever yelled at me, like, what do kids do? They usually clam up, they close their ears, and they stare at the ground.
They shut down.
They stare at the ground. So, like, understanding of, like, okay, as a coach. Like, I mean, if my players throw their helmets, what does a coach do? You usually get in their face. You tell them to control their emotions. Well, what about us as coaches?
Yeah,
exactly. What about us as coaches?
Exactly. You know? Yeah, I have had to learn that lesson the hard way as well, of, you know, the yell first mentality. It's hard to control.
It is so hard to control.
Like, I see something wrong. I see something happen that shouldn't happen that way, and I immediately want to scream and yell and jump up and down and throw a fit. And it has taken a long time to learn how not to do that.
Yeah.
And I still don't get it right all the time.
No, not at all.
Even going back to this summer when we were playing in our World Series tournament, I yelled at a kid for not hustling down to second base on a steal. And he got thrown out. But like, it was cause he didn't hustle. And I jumped up and down and screamed and yelled, because I have always said, like, I don't care if you make mistakes, but if you don't give me 100% effort, that's when you're going to hear it from me.
Yep.
So I gave it to him. Fast forward to this fall, and I've had an issue with that same kid, great kid, where he's dished it back to me. And it's like, oh, as a coach, what I have done is created this atmosphere where it's okay to yell at each other.
Interesting.
That's the way that I'm taking it. And like, I had to pull him aside. I didn't react emotionally when he reacted emotionally to me, because we were in practice and he had a bad call go against him, and I had made the call.
Yeah.
And he got frustrated with me and he yelled at me. And I was like, no way, no way, Jose. You're doing, you know, 20 push-ups and 5 laps right now. And I didn't react emotionally, but I pulled him aside later. I was like, hey, I love you. I care about you. I think you're a great kid. But like, I can't let you talk back to me like that as a coach. Like, that's a respect thing, right? Yeah. And talked with his parents a little bit. Everything's fine. He's a good kid, and he's one of our better players. And this past weekend up in Wichita, he went nuts and just about hit a home run.
Yeah.
Bounced one over the fence for a ground rule double. He was making plays in the field. He shut it down pitching. He's just come a long way in the year that I've had him. And so, love the kid. But I have, from a self-reflective standpoint, have looked back on that and thought, what was my role in that? And I mean, I was immediately connected to that moment when I got in his face and got mad at him for not hustling. And I was like, well, you know, what goes around comes around, probably, in that situation.
Sure.
So
for sure.
It's a lesson learned for me as a coach to go, I want to make sure that I don't make that same mistake twice.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, make the mistake once, don't make it twice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, as coaches, a lot of it's like accountability. You know, it goes both ways. But like, attitude and effort, I think those are two. Like, I'm not saying that you are right to yell at a player, but like, if they're not giving you, if they're having poor attitude or poor effort, like, I'm probably going to yell at my team too. I'm going to get on them. There's no attitude or effort.
But I wonder if, like, instead of being loud to where everybody could hear,
sure,
I could have pulled him aside and said, and just got down on one knee, looked him in the eyes, and be like, hey, that lack of hustle is unacceptable.
Yeah.
And you're going to run laps at the next practice or whatever it is.
Yeah, for sure.
I could have handled that differently and still disciplined the lack of hustle.
Yeah, just done it in a different way. Yeah. It's hard, man. It's so hard, especially when you're in the moment, because as coaches, we just care so much.
Yeah.
We care so much. We want them to succeed. We want them to do the right things. It's just like being a parent, you know, like you want them to do the right things. When they don't, it's definitely like, oh, hold on, hold on. I can't yell. I can't scream. Yeah. Even though we've all been there. It's like, hey, take a breath. Let's address this the proper way, or, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I've got another one. I've got another one for you. But this one's on the other end, when I lost control of my emotions because I was so excited. That's something good. So we were in a tournament. It was a championship game. We were tied, I think. Home team, bottom of the last inning. We've got a runner on second, I think it was. And my son was up to bat.
Mm-hmm.
And I called for him to bunt and move that runner over. And he puts the bunt down perfectly down the first baseline. And they try to get him out at first and overthrow it. And that runner from second scores, and we walk it off, and we win. And, like, even before the umpires have called game, I'm jumping up and down, screaming my head off, and I run.
Louder than any of the kids.
Yeah, and my son Carter had rounded first and had gone, you know, around to second. And I met him in between the second and third base and, like, picked him up and grabbed him and all this stuff. And my coaches were like, Adam, they have not called game. Like, they can call.
You're on the field.
And I'm on the field, losing my mind. So that was another – I'm like, yeah, we won the championship, and that was great. And,
oh, my gosh.
That's another instance where where I have lost control of myself. And one of the things Wooden talks about is how when his teams – and he won 10 national championships. But when his teams were about to win – and he knew that they were going to win. Like, they had enough of a lead that the game was decided.
Yeah.
He would call a timeout and say, look, we're going to let the alumni and the fans and the students go crazy. Y'all are not going to go crazy. We're going to stay in control.
Wow.
We're just going to, you know, enjoy the moment, but we're not going to go nuts and act like we've been here before. And I was like, okay, wow. So to him, that was the other flip side of the self-control. So not just the anger, like keeping that in check, but not going so crazy over the top with our emotions on the other side either.
For sure. I mean, you see it all the way, like with athletes on TV, like even if it's a national championship or whatever, like the players get excited, but a lot of them are coached now to just like act like they've been there, you know, like they'll be excited. Like they're going to give each other hugs and high fives and jump, but like, it's not going to be like running up and down the stairs, high fiving every fan going crazy.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I mean, and that was the line from our coaches a couple weekends ago when we won that tournament up in Kansas. It was, hey, act like we've been here before, shake their hands.
Yeah.
We're not going to lose our minds over this. And that was the approach we took. And I think that's awesome. You know, the right way to go.
That's awesome.
So while we've got to balance that enthusiasm and excitement, we also want to keep it in control.
Yeah. Because when you think of emotions, you always think of negative ones, but it's positive ones too. You have to make sure that all emotions are under wraps.
Don't let the highs get too high. Don't let the lows get too low.
Absolutely.
Especially in baseball. There are long seasons.
It's the truth. All right.
You ready for some chalk talk?
Chalk talk, baby. Let's hit it. Chalk talk.
All right, you're up first.
All right, so Chalk Talk, man. So usually Chalk Talk, that's the segment we talk about good, bad, whatever, just coaching experiences. this past weekend, man, we played in a tournament where it should have been a cakewalk. Mm-hmm. Should have been.
Yep.
It should have been. And we just absolutely could not play. Could not play. Like, I'm talking about.
I know the feeling.
I'm talking about pitchers. They walk a player. Suddenly, they're, like, getting mad. They're, like, stomping their feet on the ground. Getting ready for the next at bat. Not just, like, clean slating again to the next batter. We had outfielders that literally the ball felt like a skyrocket. Like, a high fly ball.
In between
right field and center field, both of them come running into the ball. They both stop and look at each other.
Oh my God.
As if, like, you have the ball, me, you, and then it drops, like, oh man. Like, as a coach, I know we've all been there, but, like, it's so hard to coach a team. Like, don't get me wrong, my team's awesome. My team is great. They're so competitive. But we've all had those moments where you're like, wait.
You play down to, like, the level of competition. Like,
where's all the intensity?
Yeah.
Where's the guys that want to make plays? Again, I love my team. I love every player on it. We're competitive. But we just had – there was just one game that it was just like, this is not the team.
Right.
This is not our team.
Right.
What in the world is going on?
Yeah.
And it's always it's always baffling because there's no way – there's really no way to handle that as a coach. Like, I've tried all, and maybe you've handled it a different way, but, like, there's innings where, like, you're like, okay, I'm going to bring out all my cards. This inning, I'm going to scream at them.
Yeah.
Did that work?
Right.
No.
Right.
Okay, now I'm going to say, all right, well, I don't care. Do you guys care? Right. That didn't work. And then it's like, okay, this is about pride, all right? So now just, like, do whatever you want, you know? And, like, did that work? No. You know, like, have you ever been in those instances?
We had a stretch back in the spring, and really going back to last fall, where we were playing like crap on Saturdays, and then Sundays we would show up and be a completely different team.
Dude, we were the vice versa.
Like, and it was like, what? Okay, so I think what had happened was that we knew on Saturdays these were not must-win games. Like, in the end, they were not 100% must-win games, and they would play like that.
Yeah.
And it meant we just did not play as well on Saturdays during pool play games.
Yeah.
But then when it got to Sunday, it was like, oh, now it's must win. Now we've got to go out there and compete hard. And the problem was, because we did poorly on Saturday, now we're playing the toughest team to start off with.
Yeah, because you're a low seed.
On Sunday. Oh, man. And it was a really difficult habit to kick. I don't know that we've 100% kicked it either. But it's like that mentality of maybe your boys looked at the schedule and go, oh, we've played these teams before. We're good. You know, we've got this. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's such a hard thing to combat.
It's so hard. And heck, maybe, like, even if there's any listeners that are doing, and you guys have discovered kind of the way to flip that switch. I mean, I have no feedback. I have no insight on this other than just kind of just like airing that kind of just like frustration as a coach, where it's like, how do you change that mindset? And it's so hard being a former player. And like, you've probably, where it's just like, I want to go on the field and show them how it's done.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're not going to catch the ball, I'm going to go get someone that's going to catch the ball.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. It's mind baffling. It's just,
The only thing that I have done in games like that where I knew we did not play up to our potential is I'll pull them aside after and just be like, guys, that game was crap. And you guys played like crap.
Yep.
And you know what we do with crap? We flush it down the toilet. And I'll all have them grab their imaginary toilet handles and we'll go whoosh and flush the toilet. And we're like, we're just flushing this game. We are pretending this game didn't even happen.
Yeah.
And we're moving on to the next one.
Yeah, for sure. It's a wild experience. Well, that's kind of my chalk talk. So, I mean, we've all been there, and I just need to talk about it, you know? It's just like, what in the world? How do you do that? So, I mean, if anyone has the magic, you know, the magic pill, the magic juju, whatever it is, like, or maybe you don't. It's just one of those things where it's just like,
You know, we've had similar discussions with my 11U team of let's bring that focus and intensity from the get-go.
Yeah.
We had to have that conversation multiple times over the course of the last couple seasons of like, guys, we just didn't have the focus and intensity today.
For sure.
And like, it's such a – baseball is such a mind game.
Yes.
Such a mind game.
Yes.
That you've got to almost play tricks with yourself or something to make yourself play up to the ability that you're capable of.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, what's your chalk talk? You said yeah. I think I already did it.
That enthusiasm with the team really made a difference for us. So if you feel like your team is not playing up to potential, you know, turn up the enthusiasm and as a coach, be enthusiastic and ramp it up.
I love that approach, though, like chanting for two strikes, you know, like as a hitter.
Yeah, that was a good call. I like that.
Yeah, even just like getting all players on board with just getting behind your fellow teammates.
Yeah.
Because like if you're a pitcher and you just strike someone out and like the team's quiet, stinks. Yeah. But if you have your team being like, attaboy!
And if you're being loud and like you're getting rowdy every time something good happens and you're encouraging every time something bad happens,
it makes the other team
go crazy.
Yes.
It gets in the pitcher's heads. Even if you're not directly doing those anti-pitcher chants, like it gets in the pitcher's heads. It really does.
Yes.
And it builds. I don't know.
For sure. And I think 14, so I coach 14U, and I think the hardest part is like when I tell my dugout to get behind their hitters, they're kind of that mindset where it's like, oh, well, we're not a softball team, which I agree. Like I can't stand the softball chants. You know, like we're at that age. Like it's not like the whatever the softball chants are. But like, no, it's just about like being like, oh, good swing, or, you know, hey, good foul tip, or hey, good approach, or good eye, or whatever. It's not like pitcher, whatever, you know.
With the 9U team, I'm having to go the opposite direction and be like, y'all need to learn some more chants because they don't have enough chants in their bag. They're not getting enough enthusiasm. And, like, that's why my voice is a little hoarse today, because I was like – bringing the heat with enthusiasm at our games on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And I was having to teach them some chants.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, who wants a W? We want a W. They didn't know that one. There was like three other ones that I started with them that they didn't know. I was like, y'all need to learn some more chants.
Oh my gosh. All those chants, man. Wild stuff. All right. Let's move on. Today we're talking all about drills. All right, we're talking about our top drills in our pockets.
Top five.
That we love implementing with our teams, with one-on-one less, whatever it is. We just love to implement drills. And hopefully some of our drills, you may have heard of them, but some of them, like, hopefully, like, helps you out as well. But
all right, where do you want to start?
Let's go from the bottom up. So let's go from, like, our, like, just, like, the staple drills and the ones where you're like, oh, I love this drill.
Yeah.
All right, so okay. What's kind of like your staple drill? What's like the one go-to where it's like, all right, we're just doing this like all the time? Or
So I'm going to start with number five for me on fielding. So number five fielding drill for me is our relay race throwing. So we will set up in relay lines from home plate all the way to center field. The field we practice on is really deep, so we can set up, you know, four or five relay throws from the fence all the way to home. And it's, you know, start at home and hit your cutoff, hit the guy in front of you, make sure that they are in a good relay throw stance with their, you know, feet in a ready to throw position, their glove out, you know, in front of them, quick transitions, good, hard, solid throws, accurate throws. It covers a lot of bases, and the team that loses, so you throw it all the way out to center field and all the way back. The team that loses has to do 10 burpees or something.
Yes.
That's a go-to for me for sure.
Oh, yeah. We do that at our baseball summer camp. We usually do like four or five different teams, depending on how many kids are there. And if we have enough coaches, we actually do a coach's line too, and it's so much fun, man.
Nice.
They get so into it. Yeah, if you have five or six players on the line, fun stuff. My number five is just a team-oriented drill as well. Just a simple four corners drill.
Oh yeah.
So set up a box, go clockwise, go counterclockwise, whatever it is. Like both of these drills, the ones that you said, and then this one is really just about like playing catch.
Yeah.
Like literally catch the ball and throw the ball, and then also like work game speed. So work quickly. So play catch in a quick manner, get the ball, catch the ball. Throw it. Lower levels, literally as simple as that, catch and throw.
Yep.
Older levels, throw an arm side, so then it's just a quick exchange, get rid of it, or whatever you want to like try to place that ball on.
The little wrinkle that I will do with four corners is I will time it. Mm-hmm. And the first time around, that's our base time. The second time around, you got to beat that.
Yep.
The third time around, you got to beat your second time. Like you got to keep getting faster and faster.
Yeah.
And actually, the trick is not to rush it. If you start rushing your throws, you'll throw it more inaccurately.
Yeah.
It's the transitions. Quick hands, quick feet.
Yeah.
That's where you will gain seconds in four corners.
Absolutely.
We'll do it to where, like, if you don't beat the previous time, then it's five push-ups.
Push-ups or a lap or pull or whatever. Right. Or overthrows, bad throws, short throws.
We'll count all of the missed throws and however many you miss is that many push-ups.
Or we don't move on until we get 10 laps around the circle or around the box or whatever.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We won't move on until we get 10.
All right, number four for me in fielding it's a fielding drill that I call crossfire. It's a rapid fire fungo drill. So we usually have two hitters, two coaches hitting. You can add a third as well. We've done it that way. Sometimes it's easier to have that third coach be a catch in rather than a hitter. But with two, I'll start by hitting to shortstop. And they're just working on double play feeds at second base. At the same time that I'm hitting to shortstop, the other coach is hitting to third base, and they're working on throws to first.
Yeah.
So we run through almost a whole bucket with that. The second baseman deposits their balls into a bucket behind second base, and it's just fast. And it's working on balls right at you, balls to your backhand side, balls to your forehand side. And then we'll swap, and they'll hit to first base and throw it across to third. I'll hit to second base, and they'll do double play feeds at second. And then I will hit to third base, and they will work on the double play throw to second. The other coach will hit to shortstop, who is really deep in the hole so that they don't get in the throwing lane of the third baseman. And they're working on those deep throws from the hole all the way to first base.
Yeah.
And then we'll end with me hitting to second base and getting the out at first. And then those in between, those in between ground balls between third base and shortstop, just teaching that third base to take the short angle and teaching the shortstop to be the backup and just hitting as many as you can and see if that third baseman can make the play. If not, then shortstop gets it and throws back to the coach catcher.
Yeah. The two fungo setups are awesome. You accomplish so much in a little amount of time.
You're talking
so much done in a short
amount of
time.
In 15 minutes, every player is probably seeing 100 ground balls.
Yeah. Absolutely. Just buckets upon buckets, pick it up, reset. Yeah, and you can get as creative as possible. I mean, it's literally every single infield situation.
Yep.
Other than pop flies, but, I mean, you're just working literally every single situation. It's awesome.
Yep.
Good stuff.
All right, what's your next one?
All right, number four, I'm going to go from a hitting approach. So it's kind of a tie for me. Both of them are kind of a front toss setup. First one, it's kind of a tie. So offset front toss. So actually you're working a front toss from kind of like – behind the batter, if that makes sense. So instead of front toss from like dead center from like just straight in front of the plate, you'll be kind of off to the hitter side of the cage, and from the offset you'll basically front toss over the plate, kind of working away from them, and their goal is to let the ball travel, get deep, and their goal is to smack the ball right back net, right back up the middle. So it works on letting the ball travel, allows them to see the ball deep, but also kind of teaches them to not spin off the ball. So it won't let their front shoulder fly open. They actually have to fight that urge because that ball is going to be tossed from behind them or kind of that angle. So they actually have to work from seeing that ball travel a little bit more over their play and then be quick with their barrel to the back net.
Okay, so the coach is set up on the same side as the hitter.
Yes. Yep.
Off, kind of offset at an angle.
Kind of more towards the side of the net. Yeah.
Right, right.
So if you have a righty, up, you're kind of towards their backside, if that makes sense. The back of the righty's box. So you're still front toss depth, but just kind of offset off to the corner.
Oh, okay. I like that.
So
like
it's nice.
And it's a line drive back up the middle.
Line drive up the middle. So it teaches them like the ball's coming from a little bit behind them. So their front shoulder should not fly open. They should be able to track,
good.
Keep
like
that front shoulder down, let it travel over the plate, and then from there smack the ball right back up the middle.
I like that.
I like that. But it's also a tie with my other one, which is just a normal front toss approach. They'll be set up in launch position, which means they're going to step. They're going to have their hands loaded. So really the only move that they're making is to the ball. But I like doing it to a half swing, meaning they're going to get to a loaded position. Front toss is going to be flipped. They're literally just going to let their torso, their arms, everything fire to the ball and then slam on the brakes right at contact. So when they make contact, they should be in a nice strong position. Their barrel shouldn't be swiping up and around. They shouldn't be rolling it over. They should be nice palm up, palm down. The intent should be like try to put a dent in the ball, but also slam on the brakes. So it should be just like a whack and then slam on the brakes and they should be in a nice.
So what you're trying to do there is have it be an all leg and hips.
Yeah.
Kind of swing.
Yeah.
And not let our hands fly out.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I like using this like to get rid of like the handsy swings where it's like the hands kind of like are just loose and do whatever. I want their whole core, their whole body engaged in their swing.
Yeah.
So just like literally feeling their torso, their hips, everything fire to the ball, and then letting their upper body kind of slam on the brakes once they make contact.
So along with that, I'll do something similar where we use this a lot. I didn't write this down, but we use this one a lot. It's the bottom hand drill.
Yes.
Where you just use your bottom hand, you choke up on the barrel, you hit off the tee, and you stop your swing so that you stay palm down through the swing. And the way that you hit the ball well is by using your hips. You have to use your legs to have a good swing off the tee on the bottom hand drill. Otherwise, the danger of that drill is it'll actually inadvertently teach a long backswing, being long on the backside if they're not using their legs.
Yeah.
Because it'll kind of make them flatten out and then swing around. That's not what we want. We want it to be, you know, hands straight to the ball, use your legs, and then finish high and then hold it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I love those drills. Front toss is just so easy because it's so controlled that you can focus in on the swings.
Yeah. I like both. I really like the offset front toss idea. I think that's a good one.
It'll take a little bit to get used to and just let the hitters. But yeah, it's basically working outside edge. When you're front tossing, you're trying to work that outside edge or let it like kind of diagonally go across the plate.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
All right. So I'll go with I'm going to stick with fielding drills. I'm going to go my number three favorite fielding drill right now is a triangle fly balls. So triangle fly ball is I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, but you set up three very far apart cones in the outfield. And the coach sets up at the base of the triangle in the middle. And you're throwing over their shoulder. Let me just back up. Cone one would be off to the coach's left. Cone two would be off to the coach's right. And cone three would be directly in front of the coach, but almost to the fence. At cone one, that you tell that runner to take off, and you're throwing over their head, and they're catching kind of on the forehand if they're a righty. Then as soon as they catch it, you tell cone two to go, or even while the ball's still in the air, you can tell cone two to go, and they're catching it on the backhand. So they take off and they're catching the ball over their head, trying to stay behind the ball. and catching it with the backhand, and then on the run. And then the one in center is catching that fly ball that's really high, and he's going to drop in front of him.
Nice.
So just teaching him to read that ball that's right at them and in front of them. That's and you can work through a lot of pop yeah. flies that way.
Yeah, fly absolutely. Balls that way. And I think that drill is just so just universal with young kids, old kids. Like, it's, gosh, just the basics can apply to so many fielders.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, our pregame stuff with our outfielders, our small group, we just literally work on quarterback throws, which is like a fade route, you know, But same thing where it's like over the shoulder. That, because, I mean, I don't care if you're 18, 21, or if you're 8, like being able to catch a ball while on the run. Like, it needs to be worked on over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. All right. So, we're number three. Okay, so I'm going to take a pitching approach. Okay, a pitching approach. This works during our bullpens. So, I think most pitching coaches probably know what a step back drill is. So, a step back is where kind of you come set. You step back, so, like, from the stretch. So, right when you come set from the stretch. You step your back leg backwards and you immediately go into a leg kick. And then from your leg kick, you go forward into your pitch delivery. So the purpose of a step back drill is to kind of get into your hips, get into your coil on your back leg, allow you to feel not sway over your back foot, but more so stack yourself over your hips and then get moving down into your throw. I actually started implementing more of like adding more momentum into this drill. So you'll actually be facing forward to home plate. So basically just a variation of a step back. Facing forward towards home plate, all 10 toes pointing to the catcher. You actually swing your back leg towards the catcher. So as if you're punting the ball. So for me, I'm a righty. My right leg's going to swing to the catcher. And then I'm going to use that momentum to step back into a normal step back drill. So it basically forces my hips from being completely open to completely closed off. And now as I work backwards, I'm getting into my hips. I'm getting extra loaded into my hips. And then I'm going straight back into my pitch. So I found this drill a while ago and I started implementing it more and more. And I just love it because it just teaches throwers or pitchers to really use their hips.
Yeah.
So feeling it completely open to completely closed and then using it almost like a spring where it's like your hips are going to be spring loaded and then fire back into your pitch.
I've done it very similarly, but not with this leg swing. I kind of like that. I've done it where, you know, you start from a set position and you jump back.
You make
a bigger leap back
to
that back leg and get into a really high leg kick.
Yeah.
Like a Nolan Ryan style high leg kick.
Yeah.
And launch down, throw it hard into a fence or whatever.
Yeah, into a fence, into a catcher, into a backstop, whatever. But, like, just getting pitchers to know that when you pitch, it's not all arm. Like, use your legs, man. Use your legs. Use your hips. So I that's just one pitching drill that I love, love utilizing.
Love it. All right, number two for me, we use this at almost every practice because I find that we can't get enough of it because over and over again, they will devolve into bad habits of not attacking the ground ball, of not fielding it between their toes, of not having the left foot slightly in front of the right when they're fielding. Just all of those little things around the cones drill. We use it all the friggin' time. And my boys are probably sick of it. But the footwork is so important on the ground ball. And you can tell. I can watch and see them not using it. And I have to say, hey, work around the cones. And they immediately know what that means.
Yeah.
So around the cones, you set it up in kind of a J figure with the cones. I like to set it up like really long and put those cones close together, like 3, 4, 5 cones in a row. And then we have two cones, that are where your right foot and left foot should go once you get around the cones. So they start, and I will toss the ball up and catch it. And that's their cue to give me a 1, 2, and a hop So that's their prep step. So I toss the ball up and I catch it. They give me their prep steps and then I roll them the ball, and they give me a short choppy feet along the right side of that J, and then it's right, left with the left foot slightly in front of the right.
Yeah.
Toes pointed up at the sky. Glove down, you know, kind of a little shaded, a little closer to their left foot, their front foot, and you know, field that ball out in front, out of in front of your toes, and then two shuffle steps and a throw. It's
beautiful.
It's a staple, but man, you can get really, really technical with it, and the more you do it, the more technical you can get, and the more nitpicky you can get, and should get.
Yes.
But man, we use it a lot.
Absolutely. And for it to be a staple, and the fact that your players are probably sick of this drill means that you do it so much, which is amazing. But now you can get so technical with it.
Exactly.
Like, you can now work your way into like peeling off into a backhand, or peeling off into a short hop, or harder ground balls, or shorter, you know, whatever. Like, it's, gosh, that's awesome.
But it's amazing how many times, as much as we've done this drill, I can hit them a ground ball right at them, and they don't do it.
Yes.
It's like, you've got to work around the cones every time.
Yes, and it's awesome that you work, that you have that nice, like, J effect where it actually makes them gain ground. Because so many times, like, even with people prep stepping and, like, doing their left, right, left, they'll do all that fancy footwork and still field the ball literally right where they're standing.
Yeah.
You know, like, exactly. I've seen it so many times where, like, okay, prep step, left, right, left, and they're fielding it literally the exact spot that they're in. So it's like, what did you accomplish with those feet? You know, you accomplished nothing.
Right.
Go get the ball. Move through the ball. Go through it. Field it in front of you. Unless it just smoked at you.
If I have to say move through the ball, that's probably the phrase I use more than anything. Get through the ball.
Yeah. And like, you can notice, like, if they don't get through the ball, the play at first is going to be a lot closer.
A lot closer.
And then if they work through the ball, they probably have them out by a couple steps.
Yep.
You know, it's
amazing the difference.
It's amazing when you do the small things right.
Right. It really is. And they can do it. They know how to do it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
All right. That's your number two?
All right. Number two, I'm going to go from a catching aspect. I love catchers. This is just a staple that I love working with every catcher. I think that I do this every session, whether it's a individual lesson or if it's with team catchers or whatever. It's building blocks. So, like, building up your block. So I like going in reverse, meaning, like, I'm going to go to the finished product. So they're going to be down in a full block position. So they're going to be on their knees, glove in hand, tucked, you know, in between their legs, up near their hips, near their crotch. Eyes are going to be up, so they're going to be in a nice block position. They're going to look like a wall. Their eyes are going to be up. I'm going to spike the ball in front of them. They're going to work on tucking their chins. They're going to feel that ball hit their belly where it should hit their belly, and the ball should be laying right in front of them. I'll do rapid fire. I'll do 10 in a row, just like bam, 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 bam. It teaches them not to flinch and just literally just sit there and get hit. And then we'll build it up. We'll stay in the same position. We'll go giving a glove target, so they're still down two knees. It'll be set up with a glove, and then I'm going to spike it, and they're going to literally drive that glove down, block it. So now they're working their glove, making sure that nothing goes through their legs, glove down. And then we're going to work from a secondary, so they'll be up on 2 feet in an active secondary position as if a runner's on. I'm going to say glove. They're going to drive their glove down, and then as soon as I spike it, they're actually going to kick their toes. They're going to drop to their full block position, and you can start working side to side on this one. So they'll be in a secondary position. I'll say glove to the right. They'll drive their glove to the right, and then I'll spike the ball, and their goal is to pull themselves and get around the ball and block it to their side, or even down the middle, and then go to full blocks where they're just target. They'll be in a good stance, and then I'll spike it, and they'll just block it. So I love using this. It's just a staple just to make sure that everything is firing on all cylinders. Start with the end product, and then work your way all the way back to a full product. So I love using that with catchers.
That's awesome. On blocks to your right or your left, it's the glove first and then your knees follow, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's almost like you're thinking about, like, glove first, then you pull your body to that glove.
Okay.
Shoulder gets around it, block the ball back to the plate. Glove first.
I think the hardest thing that I've been trying to teach our 9U catchers is how to not trap the ball and or want to pick it. Like a lot of them want to pick it. And even with my older boys too, that fighting that instinct to pick and blocking instead is such a hard thing to learn. Yes,
it is. It really is a mental thing. Like, you could block all day. Like, you could literally set them up, but they know how to block. And even with the 9U, like, when they come to our skill development nights, they know how to block. It's just the fact that when a ball gets thrown in the ground, what's the instinct?
Right.
You know, what's the right mindset? Oh, I'm going to block it. It's just that. It's just repetition.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. My number one fielding drill.
Let's hear it. Number one.
Number one. I think I have described it on the podcast before early on, but it's our infield routine. I use it for both teams. So it's a six phase infield routine. And it's the infield routine, or at least was the infield routine of Creighton University. It starts out with a around the horn, and the catcher throws to third base throws to second to short to first, back to a second catcher. So I have two catchers back there, and we'll get it going. As soon as the second baseman is catching the ball from the third baseman, we're throwing the next ball. So we can get around six times in about 30 seconds. Maybe less, like maybe even 20.
Yeah, his arms if get we're, stronger too.
If we're
yeah.
cooking and everybody catches the throw well. We have the second baseman do a little shovel underhand feed to the shortstop when they catch. And we can get – our goal is to get around six times every time, and we can get through that pretty quick. Then it's get one. So I'll hit a baseball – to every position, and they're just throwing to first base. And we'll have either two or three first basemen, and they're just rotating through. Every time they catch one, the next one's up. And we go rapid fire on that. Basically, as soon as I hit a ball, I'm hitting another one. And it goes really fast. So we get through that pretty quickly. Then it slows down a little bit. Then we do get one and then cover. So get one and cover is you field a ground ball, throw it to first base, and these balls that I'm hitting, I'm not trying to make them move or anything like that. They should be easy ground balls. It's just to get us loose, get us warm. So I'm not hitting stingers or anything like that. Third base gets a ground ball, throws to first. First base throws into the catcher, and then the catcher is throwing down to third base, like there's a runner coming from second. They put the tag down and then throw around the horn. Shortstop gets a ground ball, throws first. First throws in. That catcher then practices the throw down to second, like there's a runner going from first to second. And that second baseman's backing up and all that good stuff. Second baseman, same thing. Gets a ground ball, throws first. They get the throw down to second base. First base, they get a ground ball, touch first, throw to third. They do that as well on regular get one. So on get one, first base is fielding a ground ball, touching first, throwing across the diamond to third, where they're putting the tag down and then throwing to the second catcher. On get one and cover, I hit the ground ball, they touch first, throw across the diamond to third, throw to the second catcher. As soon as that ball comes in, the primary catcher is rolling themselves a bunt, and they yell bunt, and then they call inside. The first baseman sets up inside, and we make the catcher makes the throw down to first, and then they throw back to the second catcher. And the catchers rotate as well through all of them. So that's get one and cover. Then we do get two, which is also rapid fire, and it's just double plays. So third base, I'll hit the third base, and they throw to second, throw to first, and back. Shortstop, double play feeds, second base, double play feeds, first base. We hit to them and they either are yelling inside or outside, depending on where they're at on the baseline. Mm-hmm. They throw down to second, to where the shortstop is, and second baseman is covering the throwback to first, or just another first baseman is pretending like they're the pitcher and covering that throwback to first. And then get two in cover is very similar to get one in cover. Third base gets a ground ball, throws first, or turns the double play. And then they get a throw down and into around the horn. Then we do a first and third play with our middle infielders. So our shortstops will get a ground ball, turn a double play, and then they are cutting off the throw from the catcher and firing it back to home on a pretend first and third play. Second base then does the same thing. First base does a regular get two, and then when it gets back to the catcher, it's another bunt and a throw down to first. So that's those are the first five steps. Around the horn, get one in cover, get two in cover. The last phase is code red, infield in, and they get a one hopper ground ball. They fire it home, and then they get a bunt that they throw to first. So they're getting two balls on that, and then they go in and get a drink. It goes all the way around. We have one third baseman stay behind. When the first baseman gets their ground ball, they throw home, and then they get their bunt, and they throw to third. And that's it. That's our infield routine.
That's awesome. I feel like as a player, I've done that routine a few times, and man, when you like master it, it flies. Like, yeah, there's just balls flying.
We can get
proper places, but like, yeah, once if you have a team that's locked in that can actually make the throws, like with a 8U team, it's probably going to take a little more time. It's probably going to miss throws, but once you get a team that's established that can make throws, it's like, oh man,
yeah,
it's beautiful.
Our goal is to get the whole thing, all six phases, done in 7 minutes.
That's awesome.
We're not quite there.
Yeah.
It takes us about 10.
For both teams?
No, for the older
team. For the older team? Gotcha.
The younger team, it's closer to 15. But we can get through all six with 9-year-old boys, 8 and 9-year-old boys in less than 15 minutes.
That's awesome.
And now with the 90 boys, we haven't quite incorporated the first and third play yet on the get to and cover. We're getting there.
Gotcha.
We started to a couple weeks ago. But yeah, with the older boys, if we're really crisp, we can get it done in under 10 minutes. And it's great for pregame, in between games.
Yep.
We do it almost every practice. I mean, yeah, it's a staple. It's our number one thing we do for sure.
And when you master it, it brings intensity. Like if you're actually doing it, and a lot of it's like you could build intensity with fungoing, you know, because like if you just speed it up, it's gonna make them speed up.
Exactly.
You know,
and because I usually run it because I'm hitting those balls so quickly after each other. Like the focus is there. There's no chatter.
Yep.
It's everybody's engaged.
Yes.
Everybody's calling out what the next play is, and you know, if there's a tag play, I make sure everybody's yelling.
Yeah.
On those throws from first to third, it's tag, tag, tag.
Yes.
Bunt, inside. Yeah. It's like everybody's yelling.
And, yeah.
It just gets that communication going for sure.
That's awesome.
So yeah, we use that a lot. It's been invaluable. It's made our defense so good. It's a ton of catch play. You end up going around the horn like 12 times, I think, total.
Yes.
It's a ton.
Yes. So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
it's awesome. Good. I highly recommend it.
Absolutely. All right, my number one is a team focus drill. It's called Chaos. So you could probably go to YouTube. I actually found it on, like, from a college, just the college that posted it.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, this sounds – it's called Chaos. So I was like, oh, it's chaotic. But it's actually a PFP drill, so pitcher fielding practice. The setup is you're going to have three lines of pitchers depending on how many people. So I have 10 players on my team. So I literally have four pitchers ready to go. So I have two pitchers towards the first base side of the mound. I have one pitcher right in the middle of the mound, and I have one pitcher on the third base side of the mound. That's the setup for the pitchers. I'll have one first baseman, I'll have one on second base, and then I'll have one on third base. I don't have any catchers. There's no need for catchers because the balls will literally just go in buckets at each base or a pile. So how it starts is, is teaching pitchers to either get over to a bag or throw to a bag when it's hit right back at them. So teaching them to be calm, make the throws. So that's the initial setup. Make sure you always have start with two pitchers on the first base line, the line going towards first base. All right, so first fungo gets hit to first base, who's playing behind the bag. So gets hit to first base away from the bag. Everyone's yelling, get over, get over, get over. So the first pitcher in line goes, peels over to first base, receives the toss or the throw to first base. Ball gets bucketed or put over in a pile. That pitcher now becomes a first baseman. The first baseman now goes to the middle pitcher line, okay, where there already is. As that play finishes up at first base, I fungo a ball right to the middle pitcher, and they're going to throw to the double play feed up the middle to second base. So right when I hit to the middle pitcher, they yell, 2-2-2-2-2. Pitcher fields it, sets his feet up, delivers the ball to second base. The middle infielder or whoever's on second base acts as if it's a double play. They catch the ball. They perform the footwork for a double play feed. They don't throw to first base. They just deposit the ball behind the bag into a pile or a bucket. That shortstop or the person on second base now goes towards the third base side pitcher line. You basically follow your throw. The second base pitcher goes to second base, if you're following me.
Yep.
So now the ball gets fungo to the third base line. The pitcher fields the ball, delivers a throw to third base as if there's a force play there, as if it's a lead runner. We get him on a force play there. You could perform tags as well. That ball gets dropped to third base, and then now we're right back to the starting point. I go back to first base, get over, shoot two, shoot third. Everyone's funneling. You can get through so many throws to bags. It definitely, if you don't have enough players, you could just get rid of the third base line and just work first base and second base, which the other day I only had 6 kids at practice. So I was able to run 6 kids through it and do first base and second base.
Oh, nice.
But it's called chaos because literally you hit it. Like as soon as you hit it, as soon as you grab a ball, like as a fungoer, as a coach, as soon as you grab the next ball, you're hitting the next one. So yeah. Literally it's like bang, 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 bang. And everyone's throwing the ball, hitting, you know, throwing the ball, running, yes. Fielding, everything. So literally just it's very controlled. No one's going hit by a ball. Everyone's making sure that they're funneling to the next line. And it's a little bit conditioning too.
Because yeah,
they're hustling to the next line. So it's just yeah. Bang, 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 bang. So I love it because it's kind of like your infield drill where it's like as soon as that ball gets hit, the next one's coming.
Yep.
The next one's coming. The next yep. one's coming. So I love that. It just teaches pitchers to be calm, make the play, or get over to first base. It's just a nice controlled
okay, environment. So help me understand where the pitchers are set up. Are they all kind of close to the mound?
Yes, they're all close to the mound.
Okay.
So
okay.
They're basically like, I don't know, a foot apart. So okay. There's 3 pitchers, not shoulder to shoulder, but they're both facing home plate.
One and why are there 2 on the first base side?
Just by the time that you get around – you're going to need the next pitcher first. So if you have an extra player, start them at the first base pitcher side because the last person to funnel into those lines is going to be a third baseman, and that's a longer run.
Okay.
So just so you can kind of keep the drill moving, start with 2 pitchers on the first base side.
Awesome.
Or else you're going to be having to wait for the third baseman to get all the way back over.
Makes sense.
So
cool.
Yeah, it's just a fast drill. And I have a video. I mean, heck, you can just go on YouTube and search chaos baseball drill, and it'll pop up as one of the first videos.
Cool.
It's a fun one, especially when you watch college players. It's fast. It's just bang, bang, bang.
Yeah,
bang.
That's a good one. I'm going to have to hang on to that one.
It's good stuff.
A couple of the hitting drills that I didn't get into that I want to touch on just real quick.
Yeah, go for it.
A couple of them are for the same purpose. So either using a connection ball or setting up a tee up against the fence. So with the tee up against the fence, what we're trying to do is what I tell my hitters to do is put their bat on their belly button
mm-hmm.
and get as far away from the fence as the bat is.
Mm-hmm.
So like they're going to get as close to the fence as they can with the bat on their belly button and the bat just kind of barely touching the fence or the net or whatever it is. And then they get to a regular position and just hit off the tee, and they're just trying to hit that ball straight up the middle. without hitting the net that's in front of them.
Yeah.
So it teaches them to keep their hands tight and stay connected and use, as long as they use their hips and use their legs and stay connected, they won't hit the net or the fence or the, what's the word?
At the fence, at the net. Yeah. They're not going
to. Whatever.
Yeah.
And it teaches them to, you know, use those legs and turn your hips and stay tight to the body with your hands and keep your hands inside.
Absolutely.
Similarly with the connection ball, you just kind of set up with a squishy either kick ball or small squishy
like
yoga ball
yeah.
or dodge ball or whatever, and just pin it between their hands and their shoulder. You swing and hit off the tee, and as long as that ball is kind of coming out the front end, then they've stayed connected. If you notice that the ball is coming out their backside, then their hands are separating from their body too early.
And casting their barrel.
They're casting their barrel, and they're getting along in the backside or whatever.
Yeah.
So I really like that. Both of those for staying connected.
Yeah.
The other one that I use a lot is hitting off the tee. You start set up with the tee out in front of home plate, and you're in almost the back of the box, not quite, but almost. And you start with your feet together, with the barrel and your hands right in front of your face, and you are loading and striding at the same time, and what you're working on is that timing between when that foot plants and initiating your swing with your back hip. So I call it load, stride, turn the backside. So we start with the barrel right in front of our face, feet together. We load and stride out, and we do that three times and then hit on the fourth, or two times and hit on the third, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, load and stride, load and stride, load and stride, turn that backside and hit.
Yeah.
And just kind of a simple drill that really works on getting your hands back at the same time that your feet are separating forward, trying to stretch that rubber band between imaginary rubber band between the bottom of the baseball bat and that front foot.
Yeah, create separation. Yeah. Absolutely.
So I really like that one as well.
Absolutely.
And then I really like working on hit and runs in the cages with the boys too.
Yeah.
Just working on barrel control. I know.
Absolutely.
We talked about it before, but
it's so funny that people overthink hit and runs. You're literally like, your approach is literally just put the ball on the ground, roll it over. Like literally have a, like hit a ball hard, but like you can get away with a poopy swing.
Yeah.
Just make contact.
Put the ball on the ground.
Just make contact. Put the ball on the ground.
And
it doesn't have to be hard.
As best as you can, try and get it into that second base hole.
We want a hard ground ball to second base, but it's so funny how many people are just like, oh, they try so hard. It's like, it's not that hard. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I just think learning to hit the opposite way is so good for barrel control. Even if you're just doing it off the tee and like trying to go oppo off the tee, I think it's good for keeping your hands inside the baseball.
Yeah. I feel like that should be the approach. Right when you go on the tee, hit back right corner or the opposite corner of the cage.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
All right. Hey.
Lots of drills.
Lots of good drills.
Lots of drills. So hopefully you were taking notes, or go back, you know, listening to it again. If you have any questions, message us, email us. What's your email address?
pbpod820@gmail.com.
Email us if you have any questions. We have tons of drills. We're not know-it-alls, but these drills have definitely helped us out. Hopefully they help you out. And heck, if you have a drill, send it our way. We'd love to hear all about it.
Awesome. Hey, so Josh, I had a thought the other day. I think we should name our listeners. I think we should come up with a nickname for our listeners.
Oh, man. So if you're thinking that, you probably already have an example.
I do.
All right, let's hear it.
All right. So whether you are listening from Melbourne or Australia to Mount Washington, New Hampshire to Calgary, Canada,
Or Edmond, Oklahoma.
what do you think about the name PBJs?
The PBJs. All right.
Performance baseball junkies.
Yes, the PBJs. All right.
PBJs.
I can get behind that. You heard it here first, folks. You heard it here.
Y'all are now officially PBJs.
Did you just bust out the y'all?
Yes, I did.
Y'all are PBJs.
That's the many years of decades of being in Texas.
That's the Texas Oklahoma Adam right there. Oh, man. Right. I like it. The PBJs. Well, hey, PBJs, the Performance Pod Baseball Junkies.
That's right. Drop us a line. Send us an email, pbpod820@gmail.com, and we will answer your questions. We will give you a shout out. All of those good things. So thank you for listening, y'all. It's fun developing this community with y'all. There I go again.
You try to say y'all this many times?
I swear I'm not doing it on purpose.
Y'all come back now, you hear?
Y'all come back now, you hear? All right, y'all have a good week. See y'all later.
See y'all next time.